Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now NASCA Radio Blog Talk Show. We are NCN number 3028 this evening. And we have a very special guest who woke up in the middle of the night, basically, to come on. So we're so honored to have her with us, and I'll tell you a little bit more about her in a minute. But we would love to have you join us on the line. If you would like to call into the studio, the guest call-in number is 646-595-2118. And here at NASCA, we have a single purpose, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. One, by educating the public, especially as it's related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing child physical abuse, CSA, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone, and two, by offering hope and healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone that's interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And again, we are on scan number 3028 this evening. And if you are listening to this, want to listen later on, and didn't catch all of it, then we would love to have you go on NASCA.org. That's NASCA.org. And you can listen to the replay, which is scan number 3028. So our special guest tonight is Jenny Del Reeve, I believe. I didn't verify that with her, but she is from Wales, United Kingdom, and she is calling us from there this evening. So we're so honored to have her on with us and thankful that she wanted to get up in the middle of the night and do that. So Jenny helps women around the globe who have experienced traumas from sexual abuse and are challenged with pelvic organ prolapse and urinary stress incontinence. So I got on and it still messed up. I have a holistic health, she's a holistic health practitioner, life coach, and law of attraction mentor for 16 years. Unfortunately, she was abused as well by family members and various teenage boys between the ages of 3 and 8. She explains that she spent her childhood in a really fearful and anxious state, sleeping with rows of toys all around her bed at night to protect her. I'm so sorry. That just breaks my heart. Constantly wetting the bed and feeling really alone. She always has a memory of looking in her underwear as a young child and seeing blood. Jenny goes on, this led her to create a strong emotional pattern of vulnerability and insecurity. So at 15, she decided she became anorexic and bulimic, highly anxious and felt incredibly insecure about everything. She desperately wanted to feel good and sought out validation from others to feel better, like I think a lot of us do, and including using drugs and using marijuana, but nothing ever fills that void. And unfortunately, she was also suicidal at times. She had a pattern of self hatred and extreme people-pleasing. In her early 30s, Jenny qualified as a holistic health practitioner in California and was introduced to the concept of our thoughts and emotions creating a physical issue in the body, which I've heard a lot about that as well. That's amazing. I'm excited to hear more about it. So it was then that she recovered her memories using meditation and visualization techniques. She continues, she suffered from a pelvic organ prolapse and was told that she would never heal, but since she's been working on her emotional patterns, she's fully healed and without surgery. So that's amazing. And now she helps other women who have been abused to do the same. So we are just so excited to have Jenny on with us this evening. I am going to bring her on, and I also have my co-host is joining me, Victoria. Hi, Victoria.
Hey there.
Good evening. Nice to have you. So,
thank you.
Jenny, as well. So, Jenny, are you there?
Hi there. I'm there. Hi.
Hi, Jenny. Thanks for giving me tonight.
No problem whatsoever. I'm excited to be here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we're so honored to have you here, really. So what we usually do, Jenny, is we usually start with like a brief summary of your childhood years. And then, you know, maybe I'll have a couple questions or something, you know, after you kind of go through that. And or maybe Victoria will have a question. And then kind of the second segment part, you know, just talk about maybe what's changed and then how your healing process is going now and what's come up for you and all of the wonderful things that you're doing. So I'm really excited to hear what you do because I haven't heard of anybody that necessarily practices this, specifically for the pelvic floor stuff, which I don't have problems with the prolapse, but I've always had issues down there and we've never been able to figure it out. So, you know, that could very well be as well. So it's interesting to me to hear all of that.
Yeah.
So thank you for being on, and you start wherever you would like to start. It's your show tonight, and we're just honored to have you.
Okay. Hey, thank you so much. Really appreciate being here. Luckily, we homeschool our kids, so they've really taught me to be good at late nights. So I'm thinking 1 a.m., yeah, that's nothing. I've been up till 5 with them sometimes.
Oh. You haven't been up, my
Yeah, for me, it was my childhood was such a confusing time because I actually didn't, I mean, obviously, when I say that, I didn't realize I'd been abused until I was 36. Obviously, when you look back, you of course you knew, but, you know, that it wasn't something that I ever remember discussing with my mother. You know, I was really labeled in my family as this really nightmarish child, you know, always difficult, way too sensitive, tons and tons of challenges, you know, really the black sheep in the family, to the degree that I remember my mother actually even bought me a black sheep for Christmas one year. I remember that when I was about 10.
Oh my gosh.
So I remember from a really young age, I can remember 5 years old sitting in my bedroom and thinking, you know, the people in this family are absolutely nuts. And I've got to figure this out myself here, which has turned into my superpower, I have to say, but we'll talk about that later. But I remember, and so it was a very confusing time because my sort of narrative I had was that nothing's ever happened to make me this way. You know, what I almost like I don't warrant having these anxious feelings because nothing's ever happened to me. And everyone just thinks I'm really strange. So it was a childhood of just beating myself up, thinking I was inappropriate, didn't belong. And like I said, I would have this reoccurring memories and nightmares of seeing blood in my underwear and being strangled and all kinds of things. But, you know, I didn't actually have, I think because it happened so young, you know, it wasn't actually out in the open. Yeah. So that was the most challenging thing. This it was just a really confusing time.
Yeah, and what did you have then, brothers and sisters, family, or?
So my brothers, Yeah, my brother's 7 years younger than me. So there was, it was, yeah, I mean, we were never really that close. It was, and that's really, with my uncle, that's when it really first started. It was when she went, obviously it happened when I was younger with my father, but when she actually went into hospital to give birth, that was one of the memories that I recovered, that I went to actually go and stay with my auntie and uncle, and that was one of the first times that it actually happened. So there was always that feeling of, as a child, obviously she went to have this brother and left me, and that happened. So I spent, in my teenage years, I had unbelievable amounts of rage towards my mother, and I never really knew why.
Yeah.
So.
And they, like you said, people, a lot of times they do just talk it up to you're a problem child. And don't, you know, try and look, just find out what is actually going on with that child. And, you know, there's something that makes kids that way. They're not born wild and crazy.
No.
We're all born pretty calm.
No, absolutely. And my, when I started to question my family, you know, when I started to remember things in my 30s, it was really interesting because I would say to, you know, to my mother, do you remember that time, you know, when I actually had a physical bleed, you know, when I was 9, do you remember that? And she would just look to the ground and say, oh, well, we never knew what happened. And I later found out when luckily I managed to get my medical records, can you believe it? And all over these medical records in the 80s, you know, was, 75 it would have been, early 80s, was written down. You know, we questioned the mother heavily on whether there was any sexual abuse in the family, you know, and this bleed appeared to have happened only, you know, 24 to 48 hours ago, and the only people in the room, you know, in the house were her parents, but the mother just point blank denied it. But, you know, and so there was, but she, when I first started to ask her, just her whole body language, bless her heart, just would look down, and you know, she developed rheumatoid arthritis, which to me was really telling as well, with all that guilt. But yeah, so it was just like this whole thing that nobody would talk about and really confusing, and I don't blame them now, but you know, it was just like the blame was all put on me back then, and I think that's often the hardest thing.
Well, yeah, you're just a child, you don't know any better. But, so now, were your parents still together?
They were really, they had a really sort of, not physically violent, but emotionally really violent relationship. So fighting all the time. I felt really responsible for my mother's emotions at a really young age. So I became sort of like the diplomat, and that classic, I think so many counselors and therapists often have that situation. I always would feel responsible for her. I would, from 6 years old, would take it upon myself to take my dad shopping and make sure he got my mum the right present, you know, for Christmas, because he always got her these, which is quite telling, really wildly, in her eyes, inappropriate presents that's to open in front of children.
I can relate to that. Just the fact, I remember my mom I remember her sharing too much with me. And as I got older, I realized that she shared just way too much with me. And gave you a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, I remember my mom. That's what happens. That we were the oldest child as well.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And to me, you know, times have just changed. I think we're all evolving. I think every generation is a springing off point for the next. And, you know, when I look at my own children, what they're able to do with tech and the emotional capability they had compared to, you know, what I have, it's just, I think every generation is expanding and improving. And, you know, I don't think, well, my parents definitely, they didn't have any techniques, any understanding. So it was just, you know, it was like raw, ragged, wild west at home most days.
So you remember once you started asking about it and everything, that's when you remembered your father as well hurting you and your uncle, and I assume their brothers? Were they brothers?
No, they weren't brothers. They were actually, they were teenage boys who actually lived next door to my grandparents. So, yeah, that happened more so about 5, 6, et cetera. My uncle and father was quite young. The memories around my father have never been really, really strong. I've never had a very concrete, but I just know. I've known it for a really long time.
Yeah.
I had dreams about it. I always had dreams about it. And I remember talking to a friend in my teenagers being really confused, saying, I have dreams, you know, sexual dreams about my father. And and lots of things came back to me. And you just know, when I asked my father about it, that was in my early 30s, and I didn't say, I think you've abused me. I asked him, you know, what do you think about this? You know, these are all the experiences I've had. You know, you see me grow up. This is what I think happened. And he just left. He was actually visiting us in Switzerland, and he just left her house in a rage and never came back. I have no idea to this day how he got home. We have some contact, but he can't even be around me. So, you know, I think a lot of it is telling, because I think if someone asked me something like that and I hadn't actually done anything, I think I would be sort of like, wow, you know, why do you think you would question that? I don't think you would actually have that response. So I actually, oh, thank you. Do you know what? I mean, we'll talk about it later, but do you know what? I feel within myself, I never thought I would say this, but I feel completely and utterly healed to the point that I could sit with my uncle, and I don't want like to use the word forgiveness, because I did it, I'll talk about it later, but I did it in a different way, how I managed to get my thoughts around it. But I hope this doesn't challenge people listening to this, but I see it as the thing that made me who I am and a real blessing. I wouldn't change it. I'm not saying I'd want to go through that experience again, but for me, I don't believe I could be who I am or do the things I've done and I'm going to do without that experience. So, I have I have a really incredibly positive mindset about it right now, which is challenging for some people when they're at different stages, but, you know. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is. There's going to be all different stages of people listening, too. And I know that we were having a discussion on Monday evening about forgiveness. And it is hard, you know, but like we were saying, it's not, you know, it's not for you, the other person, it's for you. So if you can get into that mindset, then it's going to give you the peace that you need to heal. But some people, you're right, just aren't there yet. And that's okay. I mean, they can get there eventually.
Yeah.
And if not, I mean, maybe it's the best thing for them then to just not have any contact ever.
Oh, 100%.
Well, this is Victoria. I can forgive my father because he's human and I know what he went through. But I cannot, you know, he made choices to hurt me. And I'm the person I am because of me, not because of what he did to me. I said, throw that in there. But I also want to say one other thing to a comment to what you had said before. And I called my brother. We don't talk much, but I called him. He was always kind of the labeled bad kid, the black sheep, whatever. And so I had called him and I said, I just saw a thing on Facebook. I said, it said the black sheep of the family is usually the one telling the truth. And it took him a few seconds there, and he went, oh, yeah, I guess it was the black sheep. But it was kind of weird that, you know, that he realized at that point that, he was always the one that told the truth and always got in trouble for it, too, you know.
I love that comment.
Yeah. No, go ahead,
Kitty. Yeah, I love that. And do you know what my mother told me later in life? She said, you know, from the day you were born, you terrified me. And I said, why? And she said, because you would never, you know, you always had to tell the truth. You always had to tell it like it is, and you always had to point it out, and you drove everyone nuts.
My daughter was that way, too, but she was kind of rude about it, you know. But I said one time, I says, you know, do you have to be so rude? And she goes, well, you know, my name means honest one. I said, yeah, but how about honesty with tact? You know, she just looked at me weird like,
Gave it to her, Victoria.
Yeah. Well, it's honor to be honest, and I told her that I valued honesty, you know. So then, you know, trying to talk to a kid is, you know, but I really want to bring up, too, what you were talking about the, you know, the family dynamics and stuff, you know. It's that affects kids so badly. I'm doing an event for Domestic Violence Awareness and Prevention Month, and I'm doing an event, but it's because I'm the Minnesota ambassador for NASCA, focusing on the harmful effects that domestic violence has on children. You know, because I know that you said that, didn't you say that you said you thought it was your fault? Or
Everything was my fault. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll listen. Sorry about interrupting. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I love not interrupting. At all. Thank you. Please interrupt away all you like.
Yeah. No, and I have similar experience as well. It was one of the people was my stepdad. And my mom stayed with him until she passed away 20 years ago. And he is still alive. And so I'm able, he had asked me for his forgiveness when my mom was alive. And I told her about it. However, I felt it was coming more from her. But after my mom passed away, I raised my kids at the church. And one day he just showed up at the church and started going to church with me. And then asked for forgiveness again. And that's when I felt it was really sincere. So, I mean, it's different with everybody, too, because I didn't necessarily believe him the first time when my mom was around. And so, I mean, and that's understandable. Like, we're talking about the whole forgiveness thing. I still struggle with it because I'm still sometimes in that mindset of I'm the only one left with him. And my whole biological family has passed away. And my younger brother, he passed away 6 years ago. And so it's only him and I now in the family, but I was raised to take care of him. And I've gotten to the point where I'm able to set up boundaries. So I don't take care of him as much as he'd like me to. I will be there if he needs me. But, you know, sometimes he plays pitiful me, and I'm just like, you know, you made your choice a long time ago. When I was a child. So, 100%.
My biological father, who I refer to as my sperm donor because it's the only good thing he ever did for me. Passed away about 3 years ago, and I read it on Facebook because I was in hiding from him. I even changed my name because I was speaking out in 86, and I was afraid he'd find me, and he threatened to keep me a prisoner. But anyway, you know, I'm not telling my story, but I do want to say that. So I found out that he passed away because my uncle I was still in contact with, and he posted it on Facebook. So I went on there and I said, normally I can't put I can put anything into words, but right now the only thing I can say is I feel freedom. I found out my biological, father passed away. And my cousin, who we were very close and we kind of connected back up on Facebook, unfriended me. I'm kind of mixed feelings about that. Like maybe something happened to her or maybe it's just the whole, you know, betrayal and protecting the family thing. It doesn't really matter because I am safe and my kids are safe, you know. There was almost a time where it was getting to the point where he was going to start hurting my daughter. So,
and we
made
a decision. I think all three of us can say that we made the decision to change that narrative going forward. So instead of carrying it on generationally, we're making the decision to not do that. And it's huge.
Right.
It's huge for our children and grandchildren.
Well, I was sexually abused from infancy till I was 21 by him. Until I finally escaped with my daughter, Not his fault.
Well, no, I think that I hope you don't mind, Jenny, that we're sharing a little bit just because I think it helps.
Of course
We're all
connected. I love that. You know, it's great.
So,
of course. Yeah, absolutely.
But we do
carry on.
Yeah.
I'm
no,
just
we
say
we
a little
want
bit
to
on.
Carry on now. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say a little bit on forgiveness, actually, because I had so much rage going on that I actually couldn't, I really couldn't forgive in those early days, and I think that's understandable. But what really helped me was rather than, because what I discovered that was that every time I focused on forgiveness, you know, when you try to forgive, you try to forgive someone and something. And of course, you can't come to positive thoughts about what actually happened. Who can? But when I really focused on, okay, what I really want to do is connect to who I really am. So for me, you know, that energy, that I'm not religious, but, you know, I really think that the part of us that is not physical, however you want to describe that, you know, as soon as I connected to
spiritual.
That energy and connected to that, that spiritual love energy, I thought that is my route to it, because if I can connect to that, I know that there's a different perspective here, and that's my route to healing. And the first thought I started with, really similar to your sperm donor thought, was, you know, this person gave me life, and, you know, I'm really appreciative for this life, and that I'm here and I'm going to do something with it. So I started there, but I decided not to focus on forgiveness because it constantly kept triggering the thoughts back there, but to focus on connecting to, you know, what if I were love right now, what would love do and how would love think? And I decided to sort of hand it over to the universe. Some people say hand it over to God, and really allow those thoughts to come to me. So not to try and do it with my humanity, but to connect as best as I could and then allow those thoughts that came to me. And that was when it all started to change for me. That was so unbelievably transformative for me then.
I have a question then. I do think that sometimes it is words that kind of get us stuck or get us like, because I also, you know, send out love and energy and stuff to the universe and feel that, you know, that is where my roots are too. I was spiritually and religiously abused by him. And so, you know, he was saved like 7 times, and like my biological mother says, you know, anybody that saved 7 times, that he would actually read the Bible and then, you know, do stuff to me. So I have a real hard time with all that, but I did connect to my spirituality and do go and meditate. Every morning I make sure I spend 1-2 hours in my meditation spot outside that I made for myself. And release things to the universe, whether I even know what it is or not. But like you said, the negative energy, you know, and trying to, you know, get the love from the universe and, you know, give out love.
So, go ahead and pick up kind of where you left off a while ago. If you want.
That's okay. So I guess my teenage years were the most crazy, still not knowing really what had happened. So, you know, really promiscuous, but would be sort of like almost that classic situation of almost unconscious, you know, during intimacy. And then when I had boyfriends that I really, really liked, then that's when it became really difficult, you know, when there were emotions involved and when I felt really vulnerable. And it was actually a boyfriend when I would have been in about 19, really lovely guy, who actually said to me, do you think, you know, such an amazing guy when I think he was only 20, do you think something happened to you? And I remember saying, what do you mean? And he never said any more. He was so, when I look back, so caring and realized, I don't think she's ready to hear this. But he just said, well, just think about it, you know, you really struggle, you know, when we have sex a lot of the time, and you can anger can come up and feel this, and do you think something happened? And it was so interesting that when you're not ready, or you're, you know, not ready to allow those thoughts in, I remember just thinking, having no clue whatsoever what he was talking about. The same happened when I went to see a chiropractor, because I've always done a lot of sport all my life, and in my early 20s a chiropractor actually said to me, you know, I think you've been sexually abused. And I remember thinking, what because I was so angry back then. What an idiot. What is he talking about? I never went to see him again, you know. So all the signs were there, and the drinking and the drugs and, you know, and the eating disorders, yeah. all of that stuff. But, yeah, I just was not ready to, even though when I looked, there were so many clues along the way and people sharing that with me, I just really wasn't ready to sort of bring that to realization.
No.
And
now, were you
and then
able
again,
to
that
go
was,
to school
yeah.
and concentrate on school? And were you?
Oh, yeah. A top A students, of course.
Were you? Yeah. I think you either overachieve or underachieve, but when you've got all that going
yeah.
on in your head, you know what's going on. Yeah. I was
school
more of an underachiever.
School brought me a relief. Oh, you were the other way. Were you? Yeah.
I just ran away. But yeah, school.
It brought me a relief. I think I remember my mom saying, "Oh, she loves school. You know, she has the best attendance in the whole year." And I was thinking, "Yes, because I forget to get away from you lot." You know,
yeah.
So it was. I think that was it. I could go focus completely differently and not be at home. I think it was a lot of relief, to be honest. And obviously, there's a whole bunch of trying to prove myself worth, particularly to my father. It's really interesting. When that situation has gone on, then that he was the person I was most desperate in the world to impress.
Wow.
And schoolwork was one way I could really get his attention, you know.
Yeah. So he'd pay you?
Yeah, so...
He
would pay me. He
like
would pay
wow.
me for good results and a lot of money as well. So...
Oh, wow.
So there was that real love-hate relationship. You know, that it was like I hated him because I kind of knew, well, this is, you know, he's having to, you know, there isn't any unconditional love here. It's all conditional. It's like, I'll love you if, when, but, you know, I'm having to do all these things and preps on myself to get his attention. But then in the other hand, because I hated him so much, I'd be like, yep, give me the money, you know, in a sort of...
Yeah.
vengeful type way, as in, you know, because the subconscious probably thought, yeah, considering what you've done for me, you will pay me for this. So it was obviously when I became older, that spilled into then really overworking in my business and becoming a workaholic. And but then in lots of ways, because it was the one place where I didn't have really negative thoughts, so it was my huge place of solace and relief.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I mean, there's got to be something that you can get away,
mm-hmm.
or else you probably wouldn't be able to heal and get to the point that you're at now. I think it's really common too for us to get rebellious. I mean, we've got so much going on in there, even though we, you know, like you said, you didn't necessarily know. I don't know that I necessarily do either. Because I remember when I was five, when I was first introduced to sex, it was from a neighborhood kid. And he was 3 years older than me. And I remember thinking, I must not be mature enough for this. And I left. I ran out of the house. I was like, no, I must.
Yeah.
And I didn't think, oh, I need to go tell somebody that something happened. I didn't know because nobody told me to tell anybody. And I didn't know what it was. And I just knew I didn't want to be there. And so, you know, it is. Yeah. But other children can be just as traumatizing as an adult who does that to you, does something to you, too. So. I'm sure that you had a little bit of that with the neighborhood kids as well.
You know what? All over the place. And it's because when I thought about it, and obviously I ended up working with a lot of clients who'd also been abused, and I'll talk about that later, but it happened to me on so many occasions with other children's sleepovers, because I think once you have that, the way I've understood it is that, you know, we pick up on these patterns, these vibration, these emotional patterns from day one in our mother's wombs. And obviously in my family, there was a strong pattern of fear and insecurity, and there still is with my parents and my brother. Mm-hmm. They all still have that that this feeling that someone's going to get you, the world can get you, or your finances can all fall apart, and, you know, and so I realized that, you know, I carried that pattern with me. So then it really makes sense to me that I manifested being, you know, having sleepovers with kids that, you know, wanted to play sex games, and not sex games, I mean, and not really in an innocent way. I really, you know, when I look back, I think something was potentially happening to them as well, because like you say, that there were situations that were way beyond, you know, I was completely uncomfortable, and that was around about sort of 7-8 years old. But it was always in the vicinity of this kind of thing going on, no matter where I went, it followed me everywhere. And I realize now it's because I was literally like a, almost like a homing beacon. It's like I had this sign on my head, you know, that said extremely vulnerable, insecure, fearful, anybody that, you know, would like to abuse me, please, you know, please come this way. It was, I'm not saying that we consciously, you know, it's our fault that these things happen. I'm not saying that at all, but I know that I was for sure attracting all those situations everywhere.
Yeah. Somehow. We don't know. Yeah. Well, and it could have been, like you said, the whole vibration and energy and stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
I felt the same way. I felt like everywhere I went, I've explained my childhood as like, you know, the hippie years. It was like a hippie childhood, but so it might be, I don't know if it was different than yours or not, but my parents were very open and very free. And my mom was 16 when she had me. So I think that played a lot into it as well. And then when she met my, she was divorced and had me and my brother by the time she was 20, and then met my stepdad who basically raised us. And I remember the energy changing around when he came into the picture. And things were a lot different.
Yeah.
I had to have a lot more responsibility because they were out partying and doing things. But I always felt like, it was kind of this free love type thing. And that's not, not what kids should be in. Kids should not be around that. That's just too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
No, I'm not saying everything I say is true, but just my own personal belief from what I've experienced is that we create our own reality. But when I say that, I don't mean that we consciously, as children or adults, say, "Oh yeah, bring that really awful experience towards me." But it's just unfortunately what we attract. That's the thing that actually helped me heal myself when I realized that. You know, this is the vibration. This is the energy that I had going on that, you know, wasn't my fault, but that I had going on. That's when I was able to change it, when I really wanted to say, you know, I don't actually want to walk around this planet with this fearful, vulnerable, insecure vibration. Because I created that in all areas of my life. I created it in financial instability, you know, instability in my physical body, you know, it perpetuated every single area of my life. You know, I was afraid of the dark. I remember saying to a friend once, because we used to go jogging together at 5 a.m. and I remember saying to a friend when I would have been about 18, 19, you know, when you go running in the dark, are you afraid that someone's going to jump out and rape you? And I remember her looking at me saying no. And I'm thinking, wow, I thought everybody thinks that. I thought, you really don't think that? And she was like, why would I think that? You know. And I was like, what do you think then? And she's like, oh, what a beautiful morning it is. I was just like, I remember it being a real eye-opening moment, going, wow, okay, these thoughts that I have are not necessarily thoughts that everybody has.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I started to realize it was in absolutely everything I did, you know, constantly thinking if somebody, for the short time that I did have a job before I created my own businesses, if somebody, you know, when I had the one job I had, would say, oh, we want to give you some feedback, I would immediately go to fear and think, oh, my God, they're going to tell me something awful. And then half the time it would be something nice. And so, you know, I really, when I look back, I can really see this was just a pattern everywhere. And it perpetuated every single area, you know, of my life, fear about my health, everything, really. I don't know if you experienced anything similar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I have. I don't know about Victoria, but I definitely have too. I've had spine surgeries. I have a lot of spine issues, and I think that Well, I know that plays a lot into it. I think about, because I, you know, as a child, I was thrown through the wall by my dad. And And so it's like, yeah, that probably kind of started that whole process. And then, you know, all the other stuff piled on top of everything. I was also, my appendix ruptured when I was in second grade. So I was about 6 or 7. And my appendix ruptured. And I was in hospital for a long time, for a lot of that time, too. So I definitely can, you know, relate to that, that feeling that you have of just being so different that, you know, you're just such a different person. There's something wrong with me. People are happy.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times that's what it takes for us to be able to get another picture that there's something better out there. I think it happened with a friend of mine as well. I think, you know, oh, wow, they live differently. And
I need to jump in here for a second because we just found out we got a flat tire. And we're waiting for a tow, so we might be in the cab or whatever. So I just want to let you know that I'm still here and I'm still listening. And, I don't want you to think I'm not here. He was trying to call a tow truck, and I thought I'll just stay on mute. But,
I hope that works out, Victoria.
I agree with that energy, too, you know, because I think abusers are really good at what they do, and they can pick up on our vulnerability, you know. And, like, when I got away from my biological father, I end up in a psych ward. I couldn't even put three words together. I couldn't look nobody in the eyes. I could, you know. And, then I was pretty much prey.
To
other people that came along, you know.
Exactly.
And now, like, you know, I picked my name, Victoria Ruth Kelly, which means Victorious Spirit Warrior. And I didn't feel like that in 86, but I feel like it right now. That's how much therapy and recovery and healing I've gotten, you know. But I have 36 years sober from drugs and alcohol. And I used to call myself promiscuous, but I don't anymore because we usually call women and children promiscuous. We don't call men promiscuous.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah, so I try not to use that word, but I was going to mention that I had a boyfriend, and, you know, I was basically sexual with all the guys I was going out with, you know, and but second or third date, you know, at least.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Not before.
Me too.
You know, and then, so anyway, I was dating this guy I really liked, and he really was nice and everything. Well, by the second or third date, I thought, what the hell? You know, I guess he wants me to make the move. So I tried. And he stopped me, and I'm like, what's wrong? You know? And he goes, no, let's not do that right now. I says, why not? What's wrong with me? You know, just came right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
You know? He says, nothing's wrong with you. I respect you. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean in my head, you know? I just said, respect me. What the hell does that mean? And I'm trying to accept that. Respect. Put respect at home. I was bullied at school. I don't know what respect was. You know, I went home thinking he didn't want, you know, anything to do with me because I was somehow unattractive or, you know. Now I look back on it and I'm like, God, he was a great guy, you know.
Yeah.
Couldn't let him get away.
Well, he didn't get away. He just... You know, we grew apart, and he had to go to college in another state. But, you know, I loved him so much. I was just hoping that he'd be happy and find, you know, the one that he really clicked with. But, So I'm just going to sit back and listen because I've probably got a tow truck coming soon here.
Okay.
All right. Thanks
for looking.
Yeah, I'll still be here.
Nice to meet you.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
All right.
That's
actually interesting. That's what the exact same situation that happened with my husband, because I met him at the time I was just remembering everything in my early 30s, and he was exactly the same. I remember, you know, trying to make the move with my old pattern and him just going, whoa, slow down, you know. All that can happen in its own time. Like, I just really like who you are as a person. It was just like, really? Is there something wrong with you? You know, it was It was
right,
short
being here.
Yeah. Big moment for me. And I remember my coach, therapist at the time, saying to me, "This is the first time you've made a really different choice in a relationship." I don't really know what she meant so much at the time. This is, I'm 47 now, so a long time ago. But yeah, I didn't really know what she meant. But when I look back, it was a very, very different choice to all the sort of relationships I'd been in before, you know, at that point, which were many.
Yeah.
And my daughter asked me the other day, my kids are 4 and 7. And, She said to me, "Did you have any boyfriends before Daddy?" And I've never lied to her ever. I always tell her the truth. And I said, "Yeah, a few." And she said, "What, more than two?" I was like, "Yeah, kinda." Luckily, she got distracted with something. I thought, "We'll finish this conversation another time." But,
yeah, I'm a little young still.
Yeah, exactly. I
don't know about you, because my kids are raised, and I chose not to share anything with them. I just made boundaries and everything. So they didn't find out until about 6 years ago when I started doing this work. And I go out and I teach classes in the community on prevention, sexual abuse prevention.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They didn't have a clue, because I didn't think that it was their burden that they needed to carry. And so it's been interesting, because I have 3 children, and it's interesting to see how they've reacted to it all, because they're just so different. You know, they're all 3 different people. And my son, who is the youngest, has been very interested in wanting to know more, you know, wanting to know more details. But my girls necessarily ask me for a whole lot of information.
Yeah.
And so it's a choice.
Did they find it really?
Did
your girls find it more challenging, or?
I think they do. I think that they, you know, they have this thought of the grandparents who, you know, were completely different people. My mom and dad were just completely different than they were when they were raising me. You know, as my children came along, and so and just very grandparently, and you know, and so I think it is just hard for them to grasp the idea that grandpa would do something like that, and and so I didn't know how to talk to them necessarily. I just tried to be everywhere they were as a young adult bringing up my children. I was 18 when I got pregnant with my oldest daughter. And so, you know, raising them, I was just trying to raise them and be wherever they were so I could keep them safe. And I was going to make sure that it didn't happen. But now we're about ready to have our my daughter's going to have our 6th grandchild. And,
In
about a week or so. Thank you. And so I've got body safety books on the bookshelf at home for the kids. You know, I've got all kinds of toys and stuff. I'm the fun grump. But I've also got body safety books, and they read them, you know, they pick them up and read them. And I read them to my oldest granddaughter when she was little. She just turned 10, and I would babysit her every day where her parents worked. And so we would read those books, and, you know, they just bring them to me whenever they wanted to be empowered. And still, so to this day, I've got this bond with all of them. They know that I'm a safe person. And, you know, I want that. I want them to know that. So,
tell us
a little bit. You were talking about your husband, and so how did you meet him?
Yeah, well, we both ended up training through the same institute. So we trained as holistic health practitioners in California near San Diego, and but we actually met at a conference in the UK. So he was really, really instrumental to my healing, actually. So a lot of the work, the training we did lasted, it's around about a 7-year training. And you're trained to be a corrective exercise specialist. So you're trained to the level of a physical therapist, but with all of the holistic training within it. So nutrition, you know, on the mind. I did a lot more training on the mind afterwards, but you know, that was my first introduction to energy, to the fact that you know, our thoughts actually affect our cells and our DNA, so that physical conditions, you know, have an emotional root. And that was just, so my very late 20s, I started to discover that. And that was all eye-opening to me, because at the time I had colitis. I had, I even had onset osteoporosis. I was told I would never have children because of my hormonal situation was all over the place. I don't know if you've heard about, I had adrenal fatigue. You know, I was just chronically stressed, and my body was just a wreck, to be honest with you. So I was looking for answers, which is why I did that training initially. So I was a personal trainer at the time. But so interesting, nearly every client I had, where we live near to London, had been sexually abused. And when I would go through all their details and would talk a little bit about their, people would just start opening up to me. And this is when I had no training in any, this is sort of 18 years ago. And they would all tell me they'd be abused. And I started to keep a little chart, because I started to realize how many of my clients, and I still didn't have any recollection at this point of what had happened to me, how many of my clients have been abused? Like, why is this? And I started to put two and two together, thinking, there's a reason, because I remember saying to another trainer, you know, confidentially, do you have any clients that have been abused? Well, not that I know of. Why are you asking me this? And I remember saying to him, well, all of mine have. And he'd already been starting to understand a little bit about energy and the law of attraction, how things work. And he was like, that might be letting you know something here. You know? And then, yeah, so obviously, you know, I met my husband, and then we went on that journey together with, you know, the really in-depth training. And then it was through a lot of, I did a lot of hit. I did everything, you know what, because I was so unhappy and so broken and so highly motivated to feel good. Because I think, you know, when you feel that desperate, you the flip side, the great side of it is, you know, as Victoria was saying, she still meditates every day, and so do I, is you just have a focus to heal yourself that potentially other people who don't have, you know, because you felt so desperate for so long, you want to, you know, you really put the work in, right? So, I mean, I tried everything from hypnotherapy, rapid eye movement. You know, I did traditional therapy routes initially. Everything I did, Tai Chi, absolutely everything. And really then just came to this, you know, this understanding that Candice Pert was one of the first people in the US, this is back in the 60s, and she was a biochemist, and she actually was completely belittled, especially being a woman back then, for, you know, coming up with this idea. Well, she did actually, was one of the first people to prove that our thoughts actually affect our cells. You know, they actually create a movement in our cells and our emotions. And then that became really, really powerful for me when I realized, and I started to get hold of the belief, well, I might have all of these things going in my body, but I can actually, you know, by training my mind in the right way, I can turn all of this around. And one of the first things to change was the osteoporosis, literally, to my doctor's amazement, reversed itself completely within about 6 months. I changed. It took me probably about 7 years to change my whole hormonal profile around, but, you know, rebalance that out. And obviously I was eating well and taking lots of natural remedies and drinking water and stuff, but I'd done that for years and years as a personal trainer. That's what was so great for me, because I really was back then a perfectionist, all or nothing person. So when I was a personal trainer, I mean, I ate, which I don't believe in nowadays, by the way, but to perfection, you know, really over the top, and exercise and did all the right stuff and still had all of these health issues. So then when I became a holistic practitioner, started to work on my mind, and I could see the difference. To me, there was the proof I needed that these changes are not really coming from your diet. It's helping, for sure. It's helping the process, but this is what you're doing with your mind.
Pretty powerful.
And, oh, unbelievably powerful. And that's when I really thought, well, God, if I can really start to change the thoughts in my mind and, you know, heal my body, then maybe I can get a whole new perspective on what happened to me as well, which that actually happened much later. That actually happened right after the birth of my daughter in 2014, so not so long ago. But yeah, I was able to completely reverse colitis as well. You know, I was told that, you know, I'd have to have bits, my digestive tract removed, but that healed itself fully. And then I started to obviously work with clients, and I started to attract a lot of people who'd been sexually abused and had, like I had, eating disorders and cancer, etc. And they would come to me and I'd just say, look, I can't guarantee, I'm not doing this for you. I can't tell you you're going to heal cancer, but I'll show you what I've done. I'll show you what I know. This is in the elders, and let's see what happens. And I had people who had come to me with, you know, like stage 3 cancer, and we would work on Zoom all the way across the world, and I would do holistic health protocols with them, but it was mostly the work with the mind and the emotions, and a lot of them fully recovered. And these were people who were at the end of the line and told there was no more treatment, you know?
Yeah. That's great.
So, yeah, then how it worked out was my husband worked more within the physical body, and I worked on the mind and the emotions. And when we lived in France or Switzerland, we used to actually have people fly out with and work with us, you know, for a week or two, and really help them set some rhythms, etc. And yeah, some really amazing things started to happen. And then I didn't actually have children until I was much, much older. I just made a decision with myself, for my own sorry, I'm coughing for some reason, my own journey.
No,
that,
do you want to take a drink or something? You're welcome.
Yeah,
to do
I'll just
that.
Grab one here. I'm fine. I just suddenly got a frog in my throat. You know, occasionally happens in sessions as well sometimes. I think it's like an energetic thing when you're... Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, and then I really started... I had children much later. I had my children at 39 and 42, so 2014 and 2018. And I'd healed most of my body, but I would say I still had some patterns of anger about what had happened. Most of the time I felt pretty good, but, you know, I still had patterns of anger at time and revenge. I hadn't reached that sort of forgiveness place, etc. And that's why I believe that after the birth of my children, so this was only in 2018 that I had a prolapse after the birth of my children.
Yeah.
Yeah. But looking back, I'd had pelvic floor issues when I look back all through my childhood, well, all through my life, because it started off with bedwetting, obviously, through anxiety at home. And then, because I know you mentioned you'd had pelvic floor. And when I look back, I always had that sort of, even as a teenager, you know, that stress incontinence that, you know, if you really, really, if I really needed to go to the bathroom and I was a bit late, you know, I would wet myself slightly even when I was younger. So, and this is what I find from the women we work with, you know, it's all, so did you have the same thing? It's always sort of been prevalent. It's always been there.
Yeah. Yeah. And the doctor is always like, well, it doesn't look like anything's going on. You look fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Same.
Tests and everything. I'm like, well, no, but I don't feel fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So because this is what I hear from a lot of the people we work with. So when they just always said, you know, there wasn't a prolapse, there wasn't anything wrong with the pelvic floor, even though, you know, there were challenges, et cetera.
Yeah. And I had my appendix ruptured when I was in second grade. And they had to, like, drain out all of the fluid for, like, 6 weeks before they could even get to my appendix.
Oh, wow. So that was a bad situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really bad.
Can you now connect that to what happened to you?
I think, oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That makes perfect sense. You know, it's like, it's funny because I say sometimes to people, I'm like, it's amazing how freeing it is to start to realize that you're normal for what you went through. You know, there's kind of that whole
totally.
thing. Yeah. You're like, ew. So I must not be totally out there like I thought I was. It's really freeing. Yeah, it's so sick. Not that I want other people to have to do that.
No, I say to clients all the time, I'm like, you know, just give yourself the benefit of that and let yourself off the hook with what happened to you. Of course you have sometimes fear of the dark, or of course you have a knee-jerk reaction to it, or of course this happens. You might even have some of those patterns all your life, but you can still find, you know, joy. You might still have some triggers until the day you die, but you can still find joy and you can still shift a lot of them and you can still refocus. But it's okay to have scars and wounds and patterns that you, as long as you understand them, you're aware of them and you know about them and you can let the people you love around you, you know, obviously I haven't explained to my children either why I have some patterns around certain things, but when you have that awareness, then there is that power and you just are kind to yourself about the process. Of course, there's going to be, you know, some situations and some triggers or some things you're going to create in your body. That's just completely normal and understandable.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to know that and to, you know, to be okay with that. And I'm a huge advocate for, especially my clients, you know, not going for this like Nevada place of feeling 100% joy, you know, which is not how it's meant to be. Anyway, it's unobtainable. And I don't personally believe anybody in the physical body has that, because it's not even how it's meant to be. We need those contrasting moments to know, you know, what we don't want to know, what we do want. And but I think if you can just reach for contenting moments and think of it as a moment-to-moment experience, then that can be a happy life regardless, you know, in spite of what happened. I think that most people can achieve that. Well, anybody can achieve that.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to, I got a couple minutes here, but I just wanted to say that in 2000, I was told I had untreatable, inoperable breast cancer. The tumors were attached to my chest wall, and they said even chemo and radiation wouldn't work. So my husband at the time said, what are you going to do? And I says, well, nothing. He says, really? I says, no, as far back as I can remember, I wanted to die. At least now I won't die of alcoholism, drug addiction, or mental illness. Will die of the acceptable disease that people are willing to understand, cancer. Well, I told my kids that I had cancer. Just the horror in their eyes made me think I got to at least try. And my daughter was just go to college because they were in foster care where I had placed them, just because I couldn't take care of them. And she had just graduated. She was supposed to go to free college, and she refused to go and took the chemo and radiation. And after the chemo and radiation, the doctor said, it's a miracle, which it's a miracle in itself. And a doctor says it's a miracle, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's just my opinion. But anyway, they did the surgery, and I've been cancer-free. And then about 8 or 9 years ago, I was diagnosed with stage 4 kidney failure. My kidneys are only functioning at 15%. And they were going to do dialysis. And my daughter says, Mom, what the doctor said? I said, the doctor said my kidneys are functioning at 15%. Well, what else did the doctor say? And I said, well, the doctor said my kidneys are functioning at 15%. She goes, he had to say more than that. I'll go to your next appointment. So they took some more blood. And then I went back with my daughter, and she said, I hear my mom's kidneys are functioning at 15%. No, they're functioning at 22%. My daughter said, well, how could that happen? The doctor says, I don't know. I says, well, I know.
Yeah.
They both look at me. All my family and friends and everybody from my support groups have been praying for me and sending me positive energy, you know.
Yeah.
And the doctors give me a weird look. Well, you know, I was walking with a walker. I have vertigo as a complication. And it went on and on for several years. And all of a sudden, I started feeling better. And this guy was offered to give me a kidney at AA. I didn't know who he was. He might have been in a meeting with me. Somebody might have told him I need a kidney. He says he's been praying about it, and he wants to give me a kidney. So I said, well, okay, call my doctor, went and did all these tests. And they called me back and say that I don't qualify. So I'm thinking, great, some other health issue, you know. And so he goes, come in for a consultation. So I went in there. He says, I really don't know what's going on, but your kidneys are functioning at 42%.
Amazing.
Doesn't happen, he said. And I go, well, obviously it happens because what happened to me. You know, and that's about dialysis. All of a sudden, I'm not walking with my walker anymore. feeling better. You know, it's just, yeah, it's
really happy,
you know,
for you. Yeah.
Unexplainable things. So people say, oh, I got 3 months to live or 2 years to live or whatever. I'm like, you know, don't buy necessarily what these doctors are saying, that you are going to die, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That might not
be
a plan for 100%. Your life. Don't believe it, because I didn't, you know, part of me believed it and the other part went, well, you know, we're all going to die. None of us are getting out of this world alive. And I'm just going to live my life, you know, and do what I can do. And I did. And I just kept getting healthier and healthier, you know. So I just wanted to share that before this Uber comes that I'm waiting for. But I just wanted to get in there, because you were talking about that positive energy, you know, and putting it out there.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if you do this work, you can get better and better. That's how I feel. I feel healthier and a better version of myself now than I even was in my 20s, 30s. So I just think you can just, you know, when after I had my prolapse, the doctor said to me, the gynecologist in the case said, you know, people don't heal stage 3. It's called a rectus cell. But so I actually had a prolapse bowel. And he said, you know, people don't heal stage 3 rectus cell. You know, it's a surgery thing. And he said, you've got to stop all that crazy weight training you've been doing as well, lady, because I love weight training. And I said to him, I said, well, listen, I don't want to be rude. And, you know, I appreciate, you know, what you do, et cetera. But I said, just because other people aren't demonstrating that this can be healed doesn't mean it can't be done. You know, I said to him, remember, you know, when, you know, records were told they couldn't be done in running races, and then as soon as one person did it, everybody did it. I said, it's going to be like that. And he was like, okay, well, yep. Shall I put you in for the surgery? I said, no, don't book me in for the surgery. Give me 8 months and let's just see. And he was like, okay, because he was like complete nutcase. But anyway, off you go. And I think that had to
You're
happen.
Not the same.
I really believe it. What was that? Sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, he was just thinking, you're not listening. This is not happening. But you're like, yeah, it is. It happened.
Oh, I was like, is that exactly? And I almost feel like I had to have that experience, because, you know, I've since realized how many people globally, you know, when we've worked with people with pelvic organ prolapses, women with prolapses for years, my husband and I now, more on a one-on-one basis. And when we decided only about a year ago that that's going to be the first online program we do, our offering, a bigger offering to the world, and we're currently doing research for that. Once we started getting these research calls, and I went in going, okay, we'll start. I didn't even really even think about the sexual abuse too much, even though that's obviously been prevalent with the people we've worked with. And we started interviewing people all around the world just for research, because, you know, we really want to make sure it's a program that works for people. And I remember call one, just having this strong feeling in the session to say, you know, have you by any chance been sexually abused? And she was like, yeah, how do you know? Like, yeah, it's a thing with prolapses, and, you know, it happened to me. And it was like, bam, bam, bam. We got to 70 calls, and 65 of them had been. And then I was like, okay, I really needed to have that prolapse to kind of, for me to know which direct, because we've been so broad working in so many areas for so many years, to kind of know where to focus our energy for the next however many years. And I realized with that prolapse that I still had some work to do on my patternings. And that's when I really just started to really focus in on how I wanted to feel about what happened to me. And Baron, I kind of want to say to anyone who listens back to this, you know, this didn't happen year one after I discovered, you know, this was when I was, I had my daughter at 39. So this was kind of, you know, well, this was in 2018. So this was after years and years of therapy and working on self and understanding energy. And, you know, this really was, you know, this sort of, I'm not saying the last piece, because you know, go on working on yourself to the day you die, but it really was the time when I started to get even another perspective on things. And yeah, I fully healed it. My husband and I had the most unbelievable journey of discovery around the pelvic floor. We found this incredible French osteopath who taught us these techniques that are just not known in the physical therapy world. And we met a birthing instructor who had, worked in Africa with women naturally birthing, and she taught so much about the pelvic floor that she learned from these women. We met a lady who was living just down the road from us who is in her 80s and actually had worked with Joseph Pilates himself, you know. And we just put all these things together, plus I did the work on my mind, and I fully healed it without surgery, and I think we just wanted to prove it to ourselves that it really had worked. I actually entered a strong woman competition 8 months after I healed it. So I was carrying loads of pounds, because the US is pounds, isn't it? In kilos, it was up to like 200 plus. We're talking over 350 pounds. And I didn't have any repercussions. I've never had there was nothing there. You know, when you've really, truly healed it from the inside out, you know, it's healed, it's fixed, it's functional.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, that's great.
Oh yeah, you know, you're welcome.
I love that.
And people ask all the time, they sort of say, well, you know, why, surely if you've been abused you can manifest all kinds of things, you know, it wouldn't have to be in the pelvic floor, you know, why would it be in that area? And it's just because it's usually that area you feel the most vulnerable about. You know, I remember even when I was 39 and had done all this work on myself, I still had feelings that came back, you know, when I was pregnant and being examined and suddenly felt like, wow, really exposed to that area of my body. And I was like, you know, you've still got, you know, that's okay. That's normal. And I explained, I had an incredible doula, and I explained to her what happened and said, you know, I really want this to be known amongst the people that are going to help me give birth, because this is, you know, not easy for me. This is, you know, me exposing my vagina to all these people.
Medical people take a lot of that into consideration. They just are thinking about what they need to do medically, you know, not thinking about how that could affect the patient, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was really through I had my daughter first and Bella, and I think it was really through having her that I noticed that I still had some patterns of anger. And I think anger is valid, by the way. That's the thing that kept me alive and prevented me from killing myself when I was a teenager, from committing suicide, because I had such a rage. Mm. You know, when you have rage, I mean, not that you can't be in rage forever, that will affect your body and everyone around you, but it was better than powerlessness and depression, and my rage is really the thing that kept me alive. It took me into martial arts and all kinds of things. I remember when I was in Taiwan. Yeah, I went everywhere and did everything. I remember when I was in Taiwan and first taking up martial arts, and that guy also, incredible guy. I remember him saying to me, something has happened to you. And he said, when we move on to Kung Fu with swords, et cetera, he's like, I don't want to be in the room with you. This is in my 20s, you know. So that guy had picked up on it as well. He was actually my very first introduction. I think it just sounds hilarious. I remember he was my first introduction to energy, actually. So that was in my sort of mid-20s. And I went to go and live in Taiwan for a year. I taught kids English, and he first introduced me to meditation, but I'd never heard of meditation. I didn't even know what it was. And I kept saying to him, you know, coach, when can we get on to the fighting? And he was like, look, I know you have a lot of anger to deal with, but, you know, we've got to get still in our body before we move into a martial art, you know, like Kung Fu. I remember thinking, what is he on about? Can we just like crack on with this? And then he would just close his eyes. I'd be there for an hour and close his eyes for the entire session. I'd be looking around and thinking, God, what's he doing now? And then in the end, I was closing my eyes with him and just thought, oh, well, okay, I'll just sit here. I must have felt something, because why I went back week after week to do that, I don't even know, but I did.
Yeah.
And you know when you're called to something. Yeah. And then I remember saying to one of the women in the school who spoke English, I remember saying to her, you know, I'm supposed to be learning Kung Fu. We go there every week and we just sit there with our eyes closed. And she said to me, oh, you're meditating. You know, you've got to get still inside. You're learning to meditate before you, you know, before you start the techniques. So I went back the week after and I said to coach, I get it now. I can't remember if Google even existed back then. But anyway, I get it now. I've researched it. And we're meditating, aren't we? And he just burst out laughing. And he said, I am meditating. He said, and you are learning to deal with your monkey mind.
Oh, that's cute. Your monkey mind.
Yeah.
Oh, funny.
When I look back, that was such a moment of going there and just, I didn't really get it at the time, but something obviously went through because, it was the tradition in the village I was in that everybody at 5 a.m. would walk up to the top of the mountain, they would do Qigong, you would drink tea, there'd be a tea ceremony, a real sense of community. And it was the first time in my life that I felt some stillness in my body. And I think it was part of that experience. I didn't realize it so much at the time, but I think it had quite an effect on me actually, and is what led me into personal training, which ultimately led me down this route. And then the really, really one of the most profound moments I ever had in my life after my daughter was born, when I was just sitting in a particular meditation, just a normal day, and my uncle had passed, and I literally just, all I can say is felt his presence in the room, and it was like he was just talking to me with a speakerphone in the loudest way, and I know it might sound a bit crazy, but, and I just heard him say to me, I did not want to do this. We are soulmates, we've been connected in many, many lifetimes, and you really wanted to come into this lifetime and have a very strong experience, and because you wanted to have to bounce off that and you wanted to really do something in the world and help people, and you wanted to have this experience, or you had intentions. It was sort of said like that. I mean, my own interpretation with my own mind, so forgive me. But it was to those effects that you knew that you were coming in for that, and you knew it would work out okay. And I just had tears streaming down my eyes. And it wasn't forgiveness, but it was knowing. It was connection. It was understanding. It was just a complete and utter reframe to me about everything that had happened. And that's when I really started to see that shift in my pelvic floor. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was it was quite a moment. It was like a physical body moment. You know when you just know something, and if you told it out loud, a whole bunch of people think you're completely crazy, but I could literally feel his I could feel his touch on my arm, and I could feel his love. And I just knew that. I don't believe we come in sort of, like the way the Vikings used to think with these gods and these preordained paths. I don't believe that at all.
Right.
But I do believe we have certain intentions. And I don't believe for one moment that I wanted to come into an experience with it all worked out for me, it all wonderful, I believe I chose my particular set of parents for that experience, and now I was listening to something the other day, and I was just in the gym, and somebody made this what was really an awful, it sounds like I go to a terrible gym, I don't know what this person was thinking of, but a really awful incest joke, and before that would have sent me to I don't know what, but I laughed in my head, and I thought, wow, I really have moved on from this, as in, this is just a completely different place for me now of acceptance. And I'm not saying I don't have occasional triggers or I'm perfect or anything like that, but I'm really fully at peace with it, and I have a lot of joy in my life, and a lot of those feelings of vulnerability, worries about money or worries about my health, a lot of those thoughts have gone, and I really don't believe without such a challenging experience that really caused me to focus on I'm responsible, for how I feel. I wasn't responsible for that thing that happened as a child. Yeah, but I've got choices and I can decide, and I don't want to be conditional. I don't, because I spend a lot of time doubling down all the time that I can't feel good because this happened to me. And while for many years that was true, I decided to make my narrative, well, I can feel good in spite of what happened to me.
Right.
So that was that.
Yeah, and
that
is
was
what
that,
you
know,
do with that.
And that was the big, huge shift for me in 2018. I think it was also because I wanted to, my children have their own experience. I don't believe they're here for me, that they came through me and they're going to do what they're going to do. But I really wanted to role model and demonstrate, not a perfect person. I wanted them to know when I have emotional ups and downs and be really real about that. But I really wanted to role model that, it is a choice. Ultimately how you feel, and we can't all do it on every day, but you can create a mindset around something.
Absolutely. Hey, Jimmy, we have another caller that just called in. Do you mind if we see if they might have a question for you? Is that okay?
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah, there's a call.
Hi, everyone. My name is Monica.
Who
I'm
is
calling from the Seattle, Washington area. How's everyone doing?
Hi, Monica. Great to hear from you.
Great.
I love Seattle.
Brian, I love what you said earlier about having an intention as far as where our soul and our spirit is once we're born, even though some of us can't recall those memories. So I thought it was just aligning with where I was today, and within the past week or so, I've been running so late in the day with my work schedule, but I've been trying to make a promise to myself that I wanted to get on at some other nights that I don't normally host, which I'm on every fourth Thursday, and to just get on and hear other people's stories. And so my intention today was to make sure that I got on and just to give thoughts and good vibes to everyone that's within the sound of our voice, and to let them know that regardless of what the past trauma was or the abuse, that everything happened because it was supposed to happen. And I cleared that up by saying that not that we deserved it, not that anyone deserves the abuse on any level, but it happened because it was supposed to happen, because our soul and our spirit has been destined to withstand all of that negativity, to be in a position where we could all come together and get involved with a group like NASCA and be able to share our stories along our own healing journey. So I just wanted to put those positive vibes out there for you. And I knew that it was, again, thinking intentionally and having those good vibes. I felt I just landed at the right time when you just made that statement that we all have an intention and we have a purpose once we come into this life. Whether we choose it or not, as you said, that we choose our parents. Some people may say that the universe chooses our parents for us. But I do think that particularly, whether I chose my parents or not and what I've gone through with them, I do think that my experience with them is what was chosen for me, because now I'm in a position as to teach others about it, to speak about it, and to hopefully help the next generation to understand the signs and symptoms of what any type of abuse is, and to try to empower young people to speak up earlier and speak out more frequently, so that we know that there is a community of support out there and we don't have to go through this many more years or decades in our lives before we untangle all the cobwebs in our brain to where we just wake up one day and think, oh, this is not healthy. This is not normal. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to share that with everyone. And thank you guys for having me on and just listening to me ramble for a few minutes. So thanks.
Oh, thank you, Monica. That's amazing. Really appreciate you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think definitely I could learn a lot from you, probably, Jimmy. But, like we were talking about in the beginning, though, I think that it does take some kind of a spiritual come out of thing, you know, when you've been so abused. And and you're such a beautiful example of that. Thank you so much for sharing tonight.
Oh, you're welcome.
I just really appreciate
you're welcome. And I just want to say as well, don't to anybody out there, don't sort of think, because when I used to hear people talk like this, I'd think, well, it's okay for them. But But, you know, I kind of want to share that I would sit there with these processes, you know, going through this emotional scan, doing this process, you know, going all the way from powerlessness to, you know, joy when I could, and, you know, shifting those thoughts little bit by little bit every day. And I just want to say, you know, it's a process, and there's not a right amount of time or an inappropriate amount of time, and all emotions are valid. There are, you know, there's no such thing as bad emotions. And I think just finding a way to let yourself off the hook and be okay with yourself on the journey can make the whole thing so much easier, because I was just way too hard on myself to feel good before I was ready, you know. So I just really want to honor anybody that's feeling really challenged with it, and like, that's okay and that's normal and that is part of the journey. And if you want to get there, you know, you will, but everyone has a different way and a different time.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. So we are down to the last 4 minutes. Jenny, you've only got 4 minutes left.
Flew by, didn't it?
Very fast. What do you want to tell our listeners tonight about, you know, yourself? I mean, I know you just said something very powerful, and I appreciate that. But maybe you could share a little bit about how to get in touch with you and, like, what social media sites you're on, and you could give us some of those handles before you before we close off the meeting, so people can get a hold of you.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Yeah. So I guess I want to say that if there is anybody out there who does have a prolapse, or even just or even a pelvic floor or a urinary stress incontinence issue, and we'd still like to interview another 100 people before we create our course and our offer. It's not a sales call at all, I promise. It's just we want to hear from real women with their real situations. So if you go to my Instagram account, that's Jenny Del Reeve, D-E-L-R-W-E-E. It's actually a made-up surname between my husband and I, which we're doing in the UK. Yeah. we put our two names together because neither of us wanted each other's names. So you can go there. We also wanted to create our own, do you know what? We said, let's forget what happened in the past with my family and let's create our own positive family bloodline moving forward. It's one of the reasons we did it, actually. Yeah.
I love that.
But yeah, it felt really cool. So the link to book onto a research call with me is actually in my Instagram bio. It's the only place you can put links in Instagram. And then our business name is Unshakable You. So you can Google that and find that. That's our website is there, and information in terms of how to contact us. So those are probably the best ways, through the website or via Instagram. And like I said, there's a link for a research call in there. I also, you're saying you go.
Oh, I was just going to say I did friend request you on Facebook. I don't know how much you get on there, but I've already done
it. Oh, yeah. Do you know what? I actually had my whole Facebook account hacked, and still haven't been able to recover it. So I do have a brand new account. But, yeah, you can find me, Jenny Del Reeve, on Facebook. It will look like some kind of random account because I've literally only just opened another one. But I will go in there and accept your friend request. But, yes, you can also contact me about regarding Facebook.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing with us this evening. It's been so insightful just hearing how you've recovered and how you're still working on your journey and just what the universe has done for you. Thank you so much. It's been a really insightful evening for me, and I just love getting to know you a little bit too. And I look forward to, now that you are part of the NASCA family, I look forward to maybe seeing you around, like, on NASCA's website or on Facebook or, you know, just wherever we can care. That would be great.
It's lovely to meet you too, Kim. And thanks for being such a wonderful host. I think you did a really fantastic job.
Oh, you did. No, I need to tell you that. You did an awesome job. Thank you for being here.
You realize I'm not going to be able to sleep now because I'm all buzzed up. I feel like I could go to the gym now. I'm thinking, what am I going to do?
2:30
a.m. She said, she, yeah. I was like, well, what am I going to do? I've got a full day at work as well. But
yeah. Go do some meditation, yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good idea. Thank you. Take care.
Yes, and as we always say at the end, there are enough adults out there to watch out for all children in this world. All we have to do is just pay attention, and if we see something, say something. Thank you so much to Victoria for being on tonight with us, and for Monica for calling in, and we look forward to getting to know you much better, Jenny. Good night.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Good night, everyone.
That's gone.